The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Good afternoon, John Harper in for Drew again this afternoon. He'll be back in the next couple of days. A well-deserved vacation here at the end of September. Father Simon was just talking about this being the feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. We'll take a look at that magnificent saint coming up. And maybe you have helped or have been helped by the St. Vincent de Paul Society. In fact, I'll never forget Father Rocky on the Old Morning Air Show talking about an amazing act of generosity. He comes from a big family. And Father Rocky's older brother did something for the St. Vincent de Paul Society that Father Rocky as a child never forgot. And thus, his devotion to the St. Vincent de Paul Society. We'll share those stories coming up in just a few minutes here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. But of course, we're taking a look at the weather again today with the powerful Hurricane Ian in the Gulf of Mexico. It's a Category 3 hurricane, 255 miles south of Sarasota, Florida. And 2.5 million Floridians are under evacuation orders right now. Governor Ron DeSantis says this is the time to get out of harm's way.
The instruction is you're in a vulnerable area to storm surge or flooding, evacuate to higher ground. And if you evacuate to higher ground in a structure that is sound, you know, you're going to be fine. And that's something that we just want people to know. When they say evacuate, that doesn't mean keep traveling until you have no chance of being rained on or have no chance of having any. You don't need to do that.
And that's Governor Ron DeSantis. Here's the timetable on Ian. Ian is expected to make landfall tomorrow afternoon, by late tomorrow afternoon, maybe Wednesday evening, someplace between Tampa and Fort Myers. It's wobbled a little bit, and Fox weather meteorologist and hurricane specialist Brian Norcross says that timing could change.
Tampa, Bradenton, Sarasota, Venice, even down to Punta Gorda are all in the core of the hurricane threat zone. So we're not relaxing any thoughts about the Tampa Bay area. It's all within that zone.
And it's a pretty big zone on the west and southwestern coasts of Florida. As you heard Brian on with us yesterday here on Relevant Radio, yes, winds are going to be a factor, but the bigger problem is going to be storm surge. Again, Governor DeSantis.
In some areas, there will be catastrophic flooding and life-threatening storm surge. And so if you're on Florida's Gulf Coast, from Naples all the way through the Tampa Bay area and some of the counties north of that, that could be something that happens. What we have here is really historic storm surge and flooding potential.
Now, the Tampa Bay area, as you've been hearing over the last couple of days in our coverage of Ian, among the most vulnerable on the west coast of Florida, most vulnerable to storm surge. St. Petersburg Mayor Ken Welch is looking at large portions of his city that could be covered by as much as 9 feet of water.
I'm very hopeful that that course will change a little bit more and get us out of that, you know, 15-foot storm surge scenario. But our preparations are in place. The evacuation orders are in. And I feel like we're fully prepared.
9 to 15 feet, that goes up to the second story of a house. So if you live in a two-story house, 9 to 15 feet is water going up to the second story of your house, so you can kind of picture that. That was St. Petersburg Mayor Ken Welch. President Biden has already approved Governor DeSantis's request for emergency assistance.
I'm pre-positioning 3.5 million liters of water, 3.7 million meals, and hundreds of generators. I just spoke this morning with the areas that are likely to be hit, the mayors of Tampa, St. Pete's, and Clearwater. I told each one of them my conversation separately. Whatever they need, I mean this sincerely, whatever they need, contact me directly.
We're just watching here on the monitors the feeds coming from the Tampa Bay area and all of the roads out of Tampa Bay. Of course, the evacuees, it is just bumper to bumper traffic, 3 lanes of traffic going eastbound and northbound on the interstates out of Tampa, Florida. Let's talk a little bit more about travel. It's going to be very difficult in and out of most of Florida. Tampa International Airport will close at 5 o'clock Eastern today. That's a couple of hours from now. The St. Pete Clearwater International Airport is closed already. Tomorrow morning at 10:30, they're going to close the Orlando International Airport. In just a couple of moments, Relevant Radio will take you live to the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida, to speak with Bishop Gregory Parks. Well, here are the parishes and the faithful are preparing for the impact of Hurricane Ian. And there's a story also that we're following this afternoon that's happening half a world away that could cost you more money, not only at the gas pump, but also heating your house this winter. It's the huge gas pipeline from Russia to Europe. It may have been sabotaged. The Danish military is sharing some pictures this afternoon of what appear to be gas leaks that are bubbling in the Baltic Sea. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the United States has been monitoring the activity of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
The leaks are under investigation. There are initial reports indicating that this may be the result of an attack or some kind of sabotage, but these are initial reports and we haven't confirmed that yet. But if it is confirmed, that's clearly in no one's interest.
And the suggestion of any trouble with that pipeline is already being seen at your gas stations. How much more you're paying depends on where you live, according to energy expert Tom Kloza.
If you live on the West Coast, you're watching prices go up 20, 30, 40 cents a day. And, you know, they're going back to the highs we saw in June. If you live in the Midwest, you're seeing similar increases, but not as bad. And if you're in the Southeast, the Gulf Coast or whatever, the markets have been doing the cha-cha with no real direction.
We'll go in depth on this story and what it will mean to you, not only how much it will cost now to drive your car, just as we've seen gas prices go down, but also to heat your home this winter. If it's propane, natural gas, or oil, that's coming up a little bit later this afternoon here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And, of course, we'll be sharing your stories about your devotion to the St. Vincent de Paul Society later in this hour. And also, if you have not evacuated or perhaps you're listening to one of our Relevant Radio signals across Florida, if you're down in Fort Myers, Florida, and you're listening to Relevant Radio 106.7. If you're up in the Tampa Bay area, listening on 760 or 1380, but even in Orlando, because you're going to get a ton of rain, as we've been forecasting, it is likely that you could see as much as a foot of rain in the Orlando area. And as we've been talking about, and you heard meteorologist Brian Norcross from the Fox Weather Channel talk about, as much as 20 inches of rain could fall in some places in Florida. And the Tampa Bay area has not seen a direct hit from a major hurricane in more than 100 years. There are nearly 500,000 Catholics who live in the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida. That's some 75 parishes, a number of schools, social service, healthcare, housing. Pastoral ministries provide the spiritual needs for the faithful in the five counties around the Tampa Bay area, all in the bullseye of Hurricane Ian. Bishop Gregory Parks is the fifth bishop of the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida, and he joins us live right now here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Bishop Parks, good afternoon and welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, John. Good to be with you.
It's good to hear your voice again on Relevant Radio, albeit under these conditions where we're seeing a major Cat 3 hurricane sitting now 250 miles south of Sarasota, Florida. I know schools and services in the diocese were closed or canceled today and will remain so for the next couple of days, Bishop Parks. What have you heard from some of the parishes in the diocese and the precautions they're taking ahead of Ian's landfall?
Well, I think, you know, living in Florida in general, but here on the West Coast, even though we haven't had a direct hit by a hurricane, we have been threatened over the years. In fact, my first year here in St. Petersburg, which was 2017, that summer we had Hurricane Irma approach our diocese and caused a little bit of damage. So I guess what I'm saying is that we are always on alert and have precautions and protocols in place for when these storms threaten. I think the main thing for our pastors and our priests, our parishes, is just to make sure that everyone's safe. You know, we don't want people out on the road if they don't need to be. Many areas of our diocese, particularly the high population areas in St. Petersburg and Tampa, are under evacuation. So people should really be leaving today and making final preparations because the storm is expected to really start tomorrow morning.
You talk about evacuation, and we've got 2.5 million Floridians that are under evacuation orders, and of course, many in the Tampa Bay area. I was looking at the Florida Emergency Management evacuation maps. Your pastoral center seems to be okay, not in an evacuation zone. Do you know, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, do you know how many parishes perhaps may be in one of those level A or level B evacuation zones where they could take on some serious amounts of water?
Yeah, I would. I don't know the exact number, but of 79 parishes and missions here in the diocese, I would just estimate, because most of the ones in evacuation would be in Tampa as well as in St. Pete. I wouldn't be surprised if it's probably at least 25 or 30 of our parishes would be in an evacuation area.
Mm. And so we'll be watching that and, of course, praying, as you've been praying. And as a matter of fact, we'll do this a little bit later on. And I know that you have shared on not only the diocesan website, Bishop Parks, but also on social media, a prayer for calm and perhaps a prayer to divert this storm. And we've seen the power of prayer as well. We're going to pray a memorare this hour for all of those on the west coast of Florida, and that Ian also diminishes in size. I go back to, I want to say this is maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Father Rocky, our executive director, was on the air with us on the old morning show, and there was a huge, it was a Category 5 hurricane that was headed for the coast of Mexico. And we started praying memoraries and asked our relevant radio listeners to pray memoraries, and miraculously, overnight, that storm went from a Category 5 to a Category 1, barely a Category 1. So we're talking about 185-mile-an-hour winds down to maybe about 75-mile-an-hour winds. Yes, it did do some damage, but not the catastrophic damage that would have wiped many communities off the map. So it's that power of prayer that is very important here. And I know this is one of those tests, Bishop Parks, when God is really testing our faith at these times, when we're going to leave everything behind and go to an evacuation center or higher ground, not knowing what we'll find when we get back home.
No, you're right, John, and we should never underestimate the power of prayer. Obviously, our prayer today here is that all that are in the path of this storm, wherever it ends up going, will be kept safe, that there is no loss of life. Of course, we know we can always replace property. We can make up lost days at school and so forth. But as far as loss of life, that you can't make up. So the prayers are there. And it's kind of a difficult thing, because if I'm praying that it doesn't hit my diocese, I don't want it to hit somebody else's diocese, right, either, you know. But as you said very well, I think to maybe dissipate or to weaken, at least as it approaches the state.
And prayers to those of you who are listening in Fort Myers and within the Diocese of Venice, Florida, as well. We're praying for Bishop Duane and, of course, all of the faithful down there. I remember the conversations that we had when Hurricane Michael affected the Diocese of Tallahassee, Pensacola, and that created a great deal of damage, destroyed many churches upon landfall, because I believe that was a Category 4. It may have been a Category 5. This has to be 2019. And when that hit, and, that was particularly devastating. We all saw, Bishop Parks, the faithful, the robustness, if I could use that word, of the faithful. We saw how deep the faith was among those in the Diocese of Pensacola, Tallahassee, where no matter the fact that everything around them was destroyed, their faith was stronger than any plywood that was in a heap where their church once stood.
No, that's very true. And of course, I was bishop of that diocese of Pensacola, Tallahassee for 4.5 years before coming here to St. Petersburg. And I know the exact area where it was Hurricane Michael is the storm that you're referring to. And I think it was a Category 5, actually, when it made landfall there at Mexico Beach. There's a small mission church that was there, and it was completely destroyed. Of course, the parishes in Panama City, including St. Dominic, had just a tremendous amount of damage. In fact, I just saw the other day on social media that they're just now rebuilding and have their new church or repaired church dedicated and blessed again. So it's good to see them get back on their feet. You know, there's something that I was very impressed with the Catholics in that area, that part of the state, when Hurricane Michael hit, was even though they were suffering from their own loss and the damage of their parish, they were also at the same time reaching out to the community. So people were able to stop by the parish parking lot for food or for water, for supplies. They continued to have mass. I think every day they had a tent or an outdoor grotto set up. So they continue to minister not only to the spiritual needs of the community, but also to their material needs as well.
and a tremendous witness of carrying crosses, because Hurricane Michael, that Category 5 storm that affected Bishop Wachs Diocese in Panama City, was right after that, COVID-19 hit. And some of those same restrictions were in place in terms of masses. And I'm sure you did outdoor masses under tents, and parishes did that in the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida. So we're seeing the resilience of the faithful carrying not only the crosses of the damage of Hurricane Michael, a Category 5 hurricane a few years ago, but then COVID-19 affecting so many parishes right after that. So as we look at crosses and we think of them as crosses, they're truly blessings when we really meditate upon them.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, faith will always triumph over difficulty and adversity. And when we face those difficult periods or adversities in life, whatever they may be, if we have faith and we trust in God, we will find ways to persevere, even through the darkest nights. And, you know, with COVID, of course, nobody was exempt from that. Certainly we weren't here in this diocese. But you know, we found ways to continue to serve God's people. It called us to be creative, maybe to step out of our comfort zone a little bit. And, you know, our vision here in the Diocese of St. Petersburg, our diocesan vision, is courageously living the gospel. And it really called us to be courageous in living our faith and finding creative ways to continue to serve the faithful during that time.
Our conversation this afternoon with Bishop Gregory Parks, who's the fifth bishop of the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida. There's a relative calm right now that will change in 24 hours when right now a Category 3 hurricane, that's Hurricane Ian, will make landfall. It will perhaps make landfall somewhere south of the Tampa Bay area, but in the last 24 hours, we have seen that hurricane wobble a great deal. Yesterday, it was a bullseye on the Tampa Bay area. Today, it's a little further south as you get towards Venice and Fort Myers as well. And again, something this big, and especially when it gets to the coast, as you heard Brian Norcross from the Fox Weather Channel tell you yesterday, it can wobble a lot in the next 24 hours. So anybody on the west and southwest coasts of Florida need to be vigilant. How will you ride out the storm? Will you be at the Pastoral Center? Do you have hurricane shutters? What will happen with you in the next 24 hours, Bishop Parks?
Sure, and thank you for asking. I'm currently at home at the moment, working from home today. Probably tomorrow morning, first thing, I'll head to what's called the Nazareth House, which is our seminary and house of formation here in St. Petersburg. The reason that I would go there is, first of all, it's literally walking distance to the Pastoral Center. But secondly, they have a full generator there. So as soon as the power goes out, the generator kicks on. So I would be able to continue conducting business there, be able to contact and work with any parishes that might have need. So I'll probably head there tomorrow morning, and there'll be some other priests staying there as well. And that's probably where I'll ride out the storm. We're expecting tonight, you know, that some of the tropical storm force winds and conditions will start kicking up. And then throughout the day tomorrow, things will deteriorate. And then we're expecting the worst of the hurricane effects starting probably late afternoon, early tomorrow evening here in the Tampa, St. Petersburg area.
Bishop Parks, before we go, may we just ask a question about your health? Because I know you've had some health challenges over the last year. Thanks be to God, you're recovering and doing well. How are things going for you?
Thank you for asking, John. I'm doing well, actually. Some of our listeners may know that I had an amputation of my right leg below the knee back in June, on June 9th. And it was due to some chronic issues that I had with my feet, specifically chronic ulcers. I had osteomyelitis, which is an infection of the bone, a lot of infections over the years, IV antibiotics, not to give too much information, but let's just say it was a lot that I had to deal with for a number of years. So I made the decision to have the surgery, and it's gone very well. Honestly, I was in the hospital for about a week. I was in a rehab hospital for about a week, and I have been recovering very well. I'm using a prosthetic leg at the moment and doing good with that. I'm able to walk. I've gotten back to celebrating liturgies as much as I can, but it's an ongoing process. And I would just say, if I could, John, you know, the power of prayer. I had so many people praying for me, not here only here in our diocese in St. Petersburg, but throughout the country and even throughout the world. And those prayers, you know, were so powerful, and they were a source of strength and of hope as I worked through this process. So I'm just very, very grateful for that.
Well, our Relevant Radio family of listeners will continue to pray for your recovery, Bishop Parks. Thank you so much. At the beginning of our interview, as we talked about Hurricane Ian bearing down on the Diocese of St. Petersburg, you shared not only on the diocesan webpage, but also on Facebook and on the diocesan YouTube channel, a prayer for protection from Hurricane Ian. Would you share that with us, please, Bishop Parks?
Of course. I'd be very happy to do that. Let us pray. Loving God, maker of heaven and earth, protect us in your love and mercy. Send the Spirit of Jesus to be with us, to still our fears and give us confidence. In the stormy waters, Jesus reassured his disciples by his presence, calmed the storm, and strengthened their faith. Guard us from harm during this storm, and renew our faith to serve you faithfully. Give us the courage to face all difficulties and the wisdom to see the ways your Spirit binds us together in mutual assistance. With confidence, we make our prayer through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.
Amen. Bishop Gregory Parks, the fifth bishop of the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida, you will remain in our prayers for the safety. And of course, we'll be praying all through the day, and it will be a major focus. And as a matter of fact, Father Rocky's number one focus tonight, his number one prayer intention, when he prays the Family Rosary across America at 7 p.m. Central tonight, for Ian to diminish and not have the impact that it's forecast to have on the Tampa Bay area. Bishop Parks, thanks and God bless.
Thank you so much, John, and thank you to our listeners for their prayers. God bless you.
Bishop Gregory Parks from the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida, will be praying a memorare, and we ask you to do the same thing for those in the path of the storm. That will be coming up in this hour of the Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And coming up in the next segment, today's the feast day of St. Vincent de Paul, and we're going to share stories. We're going to share some stories about St. Vincent de Paul. And I'd love to share yours as well at 888-914-9149. And I know a lot of you are talking about St. Vincent de Paul and perhaps how the St. Vincent de Paul Society helped you or you helped them. Just before we go to our quick break, Teresa's in Covina, California. Hi, Teresa. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Thank you, and blessings to you and all our, the listeners. Okay, I was born in 1941, and my patron saint was St. Vincent de Paul, and then the church changed it. Wow. But anyway, so I celebrate him twice. I just love, my addiction is shopping at thrift stores, and I want to promote today a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in Needles, California. They need money because their floor is rotting and they have to rebuild it or, you know, fix it, or else they'll have to close shop. So he said that they're on the website. And again, it would be St. Vincent de Paul's in Needles, California. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. And they have a really vital food bank. Just, I think,
oh,
just wonderful, wonderful people. So,
yeah.
And also my niece, I have two nieces in Orlando, Florida. I don't know the area, but they're Patty and Leanne. And so I just pray they will be safe. Thank you.
Patty and Leanne will be praying for you. We'll add them to the intentions tonight when Father Rocky prays the rosary. And thank you so much, Teresa. And remember, that's the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in Needles, California. And we'll add the intentions of all across Florida as Hurricane Ian prepares to make landfall in the next 24 hours. Family Rosary across America tonight at 7 here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. More on St. Vincent de Paul, this remarkable saint whose feast day we celebrate today, coming up next here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show, on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew, who's back from vacation in a couple of days. We're blessed to spend some time together here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. He lived a very long life, 16th and 17th century, and he was enslaved as a little boy. Very tough childhood, enslaved as a little boy. And that also taught him how to think about the poor and how loving Christ was loving the poor. And he was always moved by the needs of the poor. He founded a congregation of priests. He also co-founded an order of nuns. That's the Daughters of Charity. And that congregation is called the Congregation of the Mission. And what they did was bring Christ to many rural communities. St. Vincent de Paul Society was founded back in 1833, and it provides assistance to those in need. Perhaps you have been helped or have been helped by the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And as Father Simon was talking about, just being in Paris, he got the attention of the aristocratic ladies of Paris to understand, to think about, and to support the poor. Joining us now on the Drew Mariani Show is Steve Zabilski, who has just completed 25 years as the chief executive officer of the St. Vincent de Paul Society in Phoenix. Before that, in the secular world, as senior vice president with Transamerica Insurance Group, and also audit manager with accounting firm KPMG, Pete Marwick. And he left that secular workforce and he put all of his skills to help Catholics all across the country with the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Much more online at stvincentdepaul.net. Steve, welcome on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul.
Well, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
I have to share a story that Father Rocky told on our morning show. This was a few years ago when I was doing that, and it was also on the feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. And he said, you know, it really taught me about sacrifice. And Father Rocky, our executive director, comes from a very big family. And his older brother had just gotten a brand new pair of sneakers. And you know, when you're a kid, that's probably the greatest thing that could ever happen to you. But because of his, it was a big day. But because his mom and dad and all the kids knew about the St. Vincent de Paul Society, his older brother, just on his own, thought, there's somebody who needs this instead of me. And it just left a lasting impression on the youngest in the family. That was Father Rocky. Now he donated this brand new pair of sneakers to the St. Vincent de Paul Society. What a tremendous, it's a very simple story, but also a very compelling story. And I'm sure you've heard many like that, Steve.
Very many. That is the beauty of the legacy of Vincent de Paul, is that what he was known for was not only his personal service to the poor, which was extraordinary, but he organized people. He got others involved. He was one of the first people to really get women involved through the Ladies of Charity, then later through the Daughters of Charity, working with St. Louise de Marillac, and of course, formed the Congregation of the Missions, John, as you noted, and then later was the inspiration for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. So his great legacy is not simply his own work, but how he has inspired literally millions of people throughout the world for hundreds of years to be of service to those less fortunate.
How many communities is the St. Vincent de Paul Society in? Is there a number? It must be huge by this time. It started back in 1833.
It is, and it's in, I think, 158 countries was the last number that I heard, John. And
wow.
It could even be more than that. Yeah, it continues to grow, and it's all throughout the United States, and it helps people in almost every possible way. We actually have a saying that says no act of charity is foreign to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. So it's best known for feeding and clothing and housing and healing, but St. Vincent Paul really does just about everything to help people, and it invites everyone. You don't have to be Catholic to be part of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul to want to come down and serve your neighbor, to be involved and to experience that joy and that blessing that comes with helping others.
And of course, Steve Zabilski, as you complete a quarter century as the CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society in Phoenix, there are so many centers and so many stores around the country. In fact, we just took a call from a Relevant Radio listener in Covina, California, who has been to and knows people who run the St. Vincent de Paul store. It's a thrift store that's in Needles, California, and they're right now in desperate need of some help because the floorboards in the store are literally rotting out, and they want to make sure that it stays open to serve the people of that very poor area of California.
I've actually been in that store, John, in Needles. And you're right, it is an older store. And I tell you what we're going to do. Here in Phoenix, we're going to make a donation to that St. Vincent de Paul store in Needles, because it's been a few years since I've been there. But the people there were wonderful, true servants of the poor, just very kind and caring people. And I didn't realize they needed a new floor, but we will help them in Phoenix. So we will be maybe their first donor to help them with that request. So it was wonderful to hear her, to hear your caller talk about the needs and that we can be of help to them.
Well, thanks be to God for that. And of course, as we look at the economy in 2022 and simply inflation and just living in this society today, when we talk about poor, that's a pretty big umbrella these days here in the United States, isn't it?
It is, John. People sometimes think that, well, you know, St. Vincent de Paul helps the homeless and gee, you know, why don't they get a job or why don't they whatever? And that's certainly true. We do. But there are many, many people we help. In fact, I would say the majority of the people we help are people who are actually working, you know, single moms or even a family with a mom and a dad. But if you're making close to minimum wage and you have a couple of children and all of a sudden your rent goes up $200 or $300 a month, you have an unexpected medical bill, the battery in your car all of a sudden doesn't work, you get a flat tire. I mean, any number of things, you know, people don't have that type of money just sitting aside. And so that's when St. Vincent de Paul can step in and say, you're going to be okay. We're here to help you.
And
we're going to fix that car.
And you also work with the Vincentians across the country, don't you, Steve?
We do. Yes, we do. We're a national organization, international organization, but we work all across the country with people, and to the extent that we can help them with anything that they need. So we have volunteers who are standing by ready to do that.
I don't know if you know this right now, but I would assume with the Disaster Services Corporation that's a part of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, should you be needed in the aftermath of Hurricane Ian in Florida, the St. Vincent de Paul Society will be there to serve those in need.
That's correct, John. St. Vincent de Paul is, we'll go to wherever it is that people need help. What is a little bit different about St. Vincent de Paul and their assistance is, we typically aren't the first person who is responding the day of the hurricane or the day after the hurricane.
Right.
There are other organizations that do that, but we're there weeks later and months later and sometimes, frankly, years later that you'll find the Vincentians helping people with whatever it is they need, rent, utilities, clothing, food, et cetera. The Vincentians are in it for the long term in assisting people.
Thanks be to God for that. Steve Zabilski, our guest here, just completing 25 years as the Chief Executive Officer of the St. Vincent de Paul Society here on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. Our number is 888-914-9149. Perhaps you have been involved with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, or maybe you have been helped. You and your family have needed some help along the way, and the St. Vincent de Paul Society was there for you and your family. Would love to hear your stories on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. Our number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Steve, talk about the myriad of services that are available. We just talked about disaster services, but there's so much more, including job training and food pantries and visiting those at home. Explain the wide variety of services available through the St. Vincent de Paul Society.
Well, you're right. It is a wide variety of services. I think what St. Vincent de Paul, though, is best known for is what we call home visits. And that's where our volunteer Vincentians will go in twos, in pairs, to people's homes, to their apartments, to wherever it is that they're living, and they'll sit down with them and try to understand what it is exactly that you know, the people need. We'll usually bring food boxes, oftentimes help them with their rent, help them with their utilities. We run hundreds and hundreds of thrift stores throughout the country. We often will write people a voucher so that they could go into a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store and then they don't have to pay for anything. They can get, you know, tables and chairs or bedding or couches or clothing, whatever it is, shoes. You told the wonderful story about the pair of shoes just a minute ago. And, you know, the people can go in and get those things for free. But there's a whole host of other services. For example, in Phoenix, we run a medical clinic and dental clinic, and other St. Vincent de Pauls around the country do the same thing. They run a pharmacy, job training programs, job counseling programs, transportation assistance. You name it, we've probably done it in one way or another to assist people.
celebrating the feast day of St. Vincent de Paul today with Steve Zabilski, who is completing 25 years as the CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And we're sharing your stories at 888-914-9149 about your involvement with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, or perhaps how you've been helped by the society, 888-914-9149. Steve, as you know, one of the challenges in parishes all across the country, the church here in the United States, how do we attract young people? How are young people, young adults, getting involved in the St. Vincent de Paul Society? And what kind of outreach do you have to them?
Well, we try to set it up where it meets the needs of young people. So, for example, you know, we might have a meeting typically start at dinner time, and for a young family, that's not necessarily a good time. We have a program in Phoenix we call Hearts and Hands Day. We run that on Saturdays. It's where mothers and fathers can come down with their children and young children. They can be 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. It doesn't have to be. They don't have to be 12 or 16 or whatever. And we have a volunteer opportunity where they can come together and help make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or put together toiletry kits or so forth, so that the even young children can be part of an effort that reaches out and, along with their family. And then we have a young group. We call them the Vinnies. And again, these are people that are either in the prime of their career or even students in high school and college, and to give them the opportunity to become involved and to learn the joys of serving others. I mean, the one comment that I hear more than anything else from people is, gee, I waited till I retired to join the St. Vincent de Paul Society. I wish I had known about this earlier. And because of the satisfaction, the sense of meaning and purpose that we all long for, and especially when you can do that as a family. So St. Vincent de Paul tries to reach out and provide people with those specific type opportunities.
Steve, as you pass the baton to a new CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society later in this year, in my introduction, I was talking about the very successful career you had in the financial industry. Why did you leave that very successful career in the secular world to become a part of the St. Vincent de Paul Society? What was that attraction?
Well, you're very kind, John, to say that. I happened to be reading our Catholic Sun newspaper one day. It was a Saturday, and there was just a very, very small, almost like advertised article, and it said that St. Vincent de Paul was looking for an executive director, and it was looking for somebody that had some experience in management and finance and budgeting and strategic planning, and I had actually done some of those things, and I have to be honest, I had never really thought about that as a career. And then when I read that thing, I thought, well, gosh, you know, maybe, just maybe, that would be something of interest. I sent them a resume, and I think I must have been the only person who saw that because they hired me. I couldn't believe they hired me. But that was almost 26 years ago, and every single day coming to St. Vincent de Paul has been a joy because we get to live our faith. We get to live our faith, not just speak about our faith, which is important. The evangelization is certainly important, but also living our faith, putting it in action, and that's what Vincentians and our volunteers and our staff get to do 365 days a year.
As you tell that story, of course, you can see the hand of the Holy Spirit in that, and major intercession from St. Vincent de Paul, as well as we have our conversation on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul with Steve Zabilski, who is completing 25 years as the CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society in Phoenix. And we also want to hear your stories about not only your devotion to St. Vincent de Paul, or perhaps how you've gotten involved with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, or perhaps been helped by the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Our number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll continue our conversation with Steve and get to your stories next on The Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul. The St. Vincent de Paul Society, some 189 years young, at least 150 countries And that's a growing number, helped by the St. Vincent de Paul Society. As we celebrate this great saint, our conversation is with Steve Zabilski, who just is completing 25 years as the CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. He's joining us from Phoenix, and Nancy is joining us from Las Vegas, listening to Relevant Radio 970, as we talk about how the St. Vincent de Paul Society helped you, or perhaps how you are involved in the St. Vincent de Paul Society, 888-914-9149. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to Relevant Radio. Tell us your story.
Hi. Thank you. I had a mentally ill sister who was in a hospital, and unfortunately, she had died, and they hadn't told us. When I happened to call, they told me she had died, but they didn't know where she was. So after finally finding her in a horrible position, they said, well, how do you want to take care of her body? Well, I didn't know. So they said the St. Vincent de Paul Society will bury her if you will just take care of some other things. And they will have a priest or somebody to say the final, you know, prayers over her. And I was so overwhelmed. Unfortunately, they don't have a big showing here, but I'm down with the Anderson, and guess what I'm doing on Thursday? I'm distributing food to the homeless at St. Vincent de Paul as a start to thank St. Vincent for his good care.
Nancy, thank you for sharing that story this afternoon. Steve, that's an amazing story. The St. Vincent de Paul Society stepping up with some land to bury her sister. It just shows you again the scope of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, Steve.
It goes back to that statement, John, that really no act of charity is foreign to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. And I've actually heard similar stories like that many times and seen that, for example, in Phoenix many times, where you're right, someone doesn't have the ability to bury a loved one, and St. Vincent de Paul can often step in and help them with that.
Monica is joining our conversation. She's in Carson City, Nevada, listening to Relevant Radio 920. Monica, you work for the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Welcome.
Yes, I do work. Thank you. Good afternoon. Yeah, I've worked for them for 5 years. I am not retired. I do home health care, so I have off hours. And when I'm available, I help the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And I just wanted to share some of the things that we do to assist. We do help sometimes with rent or gas. Gas is expensive. People living in their cars, phones, utilities, occasionally a bus ticket to get out of town to get back to family. We also have a list, which I think is important for all the St. Vincent de Paul societies to have lists of additional resources because there are so many out there. A lot of St. Vincent de Paul's provide clothing and food, but Carson City is rich with resources in food banks and clothing banks, and so we don't need to specifically supply that. But we do offer these lists to people that they can find these resources, or if they're a senior or disabled or they need legal assistance, and that's another thing that we provide. And if they are spiritual and want to pray with us, then we do that, but it's certainly not required. I had a woman this morning who I asked if we could pray with her, and she started crying. She said, I need this so bad. And so you try to pick up those signals if somebody is reaching out and needing you spiritually, or if they, you know, they are just somebody who really needs, you know, a helping hand.
Monica, thanks for sharing that witness. Steve, as Monica tells about everything that she has done just as an outreach at the St. Vincent de Paul Society in Carson City, Nevada, if there's a Relevant Radio listener who is in need, how would they connect with a St. Vincent de Paul Society office?
Typically, what most people would do, John, is they would simply go online, Google St. Vincent de Paul, and it would come up your closest place. That's what we encourage people to do in Phoenix. They could call us in Phoenix if they don't know, and we'd be happy to speak with them and guide them to the right place. Our phone number in Phoenix, if anybody wanted to call us here, is area code 602, and they can call 261 602-261-6801. That's 602-261-6801. And then we could, in fact, you know, if they said, for example, I live in Minneapolis and I can't find it, I couldn't find it online, we'll look that up for them and give them that information.
Okay.
So we'd be happy to. Monica made another really fine point, I thought, John, and that's, you know, she talked about helping with the spiritual needs. I mean, people sometimes say to us, you know, they come to a St. Vincent de Paul dining room to have breakfast or lunch or dinner or so forth, and we learn that while the food is obviously important, I mean, they're there to eat, what's even more important is the way they're greeted, the way they're treated, the way they feel. And very often people will come to us and say, you know, if I wanted to learn more about getting involved with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, could I do that? Or if they wanted to learn more about our Catholic faith, or if we could say a prayer with them, or if we had a prayer card or something. It does really cause people to reflect. I mean, when someone transitions out of, you know, a state of poverty or difficulty, oftentimes it includes a spiritual component with that.
Artie is joining our conversation on this feast day of St. Vincent de Paul with Steve Zabilski, who is completing 25 years as CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Hi, Artie. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Hello. I am a Vincentian. My wife and I do home visits, and we help people with the money we get from our stores. A young lady in her late 20s called, reached out to us, needed help. Her husband had taken off on her, abandoned her. She had an infant daughter and a two-year-old son. She was getting evicted from her apartment, and she needed the husband, the father of the kids, was not paying the child support, so she was getting evicted. And she asked us to help her financially to drive out to the West Coast to find her husband, where she kind of knew where he was hiding out, and she needed. So we helped her with prepaid gas cards, some fast food restaurant prepaid cards. She jumped in her used Buick. Oh, we paid up her in arrears electric bill and her gas bill and telephone bills. We paid all that for her. And then she left in her old Buick with her kids. She took the four-day journey out to the West Coast. She got the authorities to look for her husband, and they found him. So when he got reunited with his family, he fell in love with his family all over again. It turned out he was afraid of infant children, and when he saw that his kids were a little bit more grown up, he fell in love with them and became a wonderful father.
Wow. Wow. That's an amazing story, Artie. Thanks for sharing today at 888-914-9149. Maria's in New Jersey. Maria, you're a recipient of some of the services of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Welcome to Relevant Radio.
Thank you. I grew up in Philadelphia. I had eight brothers and sisters, and there was an after-school program on my way home from school, which I went to St. Malachy School in Philly, which was like 11 blocks from where we lived. So we, the brothers and I, would stop at this storefront place. At the time, I didn't know it was St. Vincent's. All I know is that they gave us a snack as soon as we got in. We got milk and cookies, and there's programs like this through the year. I remember being in the Nativity and all that. But what was really, really took me away was the fact that we had never, ever experienced anything away from home. And they sent us to a summer camp for a week. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I used them. And I might now, you know, I'm older and my kids were growing up. I sent them to Catholic camp because of that experience I had in Pennsylvania. Somewhere they send us somewhere where it was a phenomenal Sisters of Mercy, I think, or something, you know, ran the camp. But that's when I heard that the St. Vincent de Paul sponsored kids to these Catholic camps. And I was just blown away. It was phenomenal. I became an independent person.
That's a beautiful story, Marla. Thanks for sharing. And Steve, as we were mentioning, how St. Vincent de Paul back in the 1800s got the attention of the aristocratic ladies of Paris to think about the poor. And obviously, it's something that was emblazoned on their hearts, as it was for our last caller as well. Everyone who is sharing these witnesses with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, be they volunteers or people that they have helped, you can see the hand of St. Vincent de Paul is as strong as day in all of those stories.
You can, John. You're exactly right. And I would really encourage all of your listeners today, when I speak with people and I say, how did you first get involved with St. Vincent de Paul? So often they say one of two things. Either my grandmother or my mother or father, they took me to volunteer, you know, at one of the St. Vincent de Paul dining rooms or food pantries or so forth. In other words, it was a parent who got them involved. Or they say it was the St. Vincent de Paul Society who came and helped us when I was a child. So people remember that. So when we include young people, your earlier question about getting young people involved, when we as adults include young people in our activities, it stays with them for life, for life.
St. Vincent de Paul, pray for us on this, your feast day, and inspire so many more to help with the St. Vincent de Paul Society. That's a call to action for all of us, as it was 25 years ago for Steve Zabilski, who's just completing quarter century as the CEO of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can Google St. Vincent de Paul Society in your community to connect with them. Steve, thank you, and God bless.
God bless. Thank you, John. Thank you.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.